I'm very happy now to welcome back to the program Charles McKay. He's General Director of the Santa Fe Opera. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you so much, Mary Charlotte. It's great to see you again.
And we are sitting up here at the opera, which is just abuzz with apprentices and singers and musicians and all sorts of activities.
Oh my goodness. We started staging rehearsals yesterday and had our first musical rehearsals last week. So we have the casts for Marriage of Figaro and the Grand Duchess in town and all of our apprentices and, of course, all the people who work backstage. And so for the next several weeks, we'll be getting these waves of more singers as we welcome the casts of the other three productions for the year. And by the time we get to opening night, we will have something like 700 people on the list for the opera, employees and independent contractors.
One of the things that I think people may not know or understand is the massive infrastructure that is this opera. And so you're not only running a company of artists, you're running a basically major physical plant.
That's right. It's a big real estate operation because we have nearly 200 acres out in the opera property. And I think we're the only opera company on the planet that has a wastewater treatment plant.
Good heavens.
And so we recycle all the water from the theater. A natural thing occurs when people come to the opera and have libations and enjoy the evening. And so all of that ends up going to the wastewater treatment plant. And then it is used for irrigation on the grounds of the opera. And so we have a whole series of rehearsal halls and vocal studios, then obviously the administrative offices, and then backstage, of course, there's a whole army of people, a virtual cavalry, the people who work in the costume shop, putting together the sets, the props. And so that's about 200 people backstage alone to build the physical production for each of the operas. And then we get into the orchestra, which is 58 players, and we have all the music staff, and then the casts themselves. So it's a huge group of people, but in order to make all this happen and in order to rehearse five operas simultaneously, you have to have all these different spaces and private coaching rooms for the singers so that they can work on their diction, that they can perfect their music and so forth.
And those are soundproof rooms so they don't hear the next person doing the same thing.
That's right. And of course, all of these buildings have to be maintained throughout the year. And then we do a lot in the way of entertaining and welcoming our donors. And of course, have a facility here, a kind of cafeteria, if you will, the canteen, where people can come on their lunch break and have lunch. It's not really feasible for people to drive into town and get lunch because the schedule is pretty tight. Generally, singers are rehearsing from 10 to 1, and then 2 to 5, and then may have evening rehearsals or performances. So it's very, very complex, the whole operation. And then in addition to the physical plant here, which entails all the gardens, the parking lots, everything else, we do have an apartment complex that we own in town where we house a number of our apprentice singers and people. So then we have an office in New York. So it does boil down to managing a lot of real estate. And most opera companies, as you might imagine, rent the theater where they perform and may have it for a week or two at a time and may have a separate rehearsal facility and an office and so forth. But we have all of that that we own that we have to maintain and take care of. So it is a big proposition to keep track of all that.
We're talking to Charles McKay of the Santa Fe Opera. Now, how does the opera deal with the reality that we're in a drought and this is fire season and it's basically an outdoor performance space and so on?
It's a very tricky situation. And you may recall that 2 years ago we had some severe fires, again, in the Jemez and in the Sangre de Cristo Mountains. And we had very severe smoke conditions going into the opening weekend of the season. And so we had to make contingency plans. We had to figure out how we could move rehearsals indoors, which is difficult since the whole operation is based on outdoor performance. So that was adding yet another level of complexity to everything. And this year, because of the current situation with the two fires, we have started to dust off those files and those procedures and are looking at kind of backup plans, how we would deal with it if we do have severe smoke conditions again.
You are an opera company, an opera campus here, a world-renowned operation, so to speak, and you are also in a genre which is known for having older audiences. What are you doing to cultivate the younger audiences?
We have a very, very active year-round education program that is not only in Santa Fe, but across the state. A very active program in Rio Rancho, for example, in Albuquerque. And then in the outlying communities, we do events in Taos and Las Vegas and so forth. And in the Pueblos, we have the Pueblo Opera Program. So we're doing a lot with elementary age kids. And
do they like it?
Do you know, I think they are really fascinated by opera because, for one thing, when we invite them to the youth nights, where they get to come and attend dress rehearsal, I think they are amazed to hear these voices soaring over the orchestra without amplification. And then to see that it's, it has lights and scenery and costumes, that it's really multimedia and telling a story. So there's a lot happening visually, which is very engaging for kids. And so they, they always cheer for the hero and boo for the villain in the opera. And, of course, this is the way that I was introduced to opera when I was a kid growing up in Santa Fe and came to the youth nights many, many years ago. And I remember being just enchanted by the sound. Number one, the thing most striking to me was the sound of the live orchestra. You know, I'd heard orchestras on recordings, but never live before. And I think the whole experience for kids, I mean, it's just such a sense of occasion coming out to this beautiful setting, you know, seeing the mountains and the backdrop of the sunset and everything and all the people, you know, just watching people and being part of that communal experience, if you will, is very, very energizing. And kids love it. Last season, probably, I was walking out of the theater at the end of a dress rehearsal, and I was marveling at these kids who were, A, still awake at 12:15 or whatever it was, and were really, you know, talking about what they had just seen, and were very animated. So we're doing quite a lot in the realm of trying to build new audiences. We commission new pieces for young audiences. And last year did Shoes for the Santo Niño. This summer we will be doing a production of Noah's Flood by Benjamin Britten that will involve local children. Members of the Albuquerque Youth Symphony will be playing for that. And then several of our adult professional performers will be in the production, which is produced with the same values that we approach everything else with. So a fully staged production with a director, designers, conductor, the whole works. We also introduced a few years ago family nights, which have been very, very popular when we offer tickets for select main stage performances at very reduced rates so that parents can bring their children. And, it's really been quite amazing to see the number of people who bring their grandchildren, the kids from next door, their nieces, nephews, whatever. And we try to intermingle them with the adult patrons. And I think there's something very, very special about attending not just the dress rehearsal, but the actual performance. When you're a member of the audience and there's that kind of electricity in the air when you're hearing the orchestra tune, the lights go out, and you get to watch the opera. And The response to that has been terrific. We've actually, the last 2 years, had to add more family nights to the schedule. And so this year we have family nights for, I believe, all the operas except Oscar. And that has been a very, very popular program.
And Oscar is the Oscar Wilde premiere that is happening here at the Santa Fe Opera, and that should be a very big and very important occasion. That must have gotten a whole lot of press already.
We are seeing a great deal of attention, and people are coming from all over the country, in fact, from all over the world, to see this opera. It's the first operatic portrait of Oscar Wilde, who was, of course, such a major figure in the late 19th century in England, a great playwright and poet. Who had a life of operatic proportions.
Isn't that nice? He has a life of operatic proportions and someone finally makes an opera.
That's right. But it was a life of extremes. It went from, you know, incredible success and fame to, you know, having this trial and being condemned, sent to prison. So he died penniless. It was really quite something, and all for what he believed in and for loving another man. And so he was a very important figure in the history of literature, but also just as a social figure, as a social rebel, if you will, and trailblazer for gay rights. And it's been tremendous to see the level of interest, and I think it will be quite an event for us. David Daniels singing the title role in Oscar, and the music is written by Theo Morrison with the text by Theo and John Cox, and it's really based on the writings of Oscar Wilde and his contemporaries. And so it deals really with the time of his trial through the time of his death, and it's kind of interesting too that Walt Whitman is a character in the opera.
Right. Desiree and Desiree Mays and I are going to be talking about that.
So I'll let Desiree explain how Walt Whitman comes into the picture.
Now, we're talking to Charles McKay, General Director of the Santa Fe Opera. You started as a musician, among other things. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Opera musician?
I studied music in high school. I was a very serious kid. And believe it or not, I kept writing letters to the general director of the Santa Fe Opera, because I grew up here, saying that I wanted to audition for the orchestra. And when I was a senior in high school at Santa Fe High, I think he finally relented and said, I've got to get this kid off my back. And so it was agreed that I would be allowed to have an interview with him for a few minutes. And I remember it was a winter day in 1968, I took time out from school and drove my mom's Buick Roadmaster, wore my best Sunday suit. I came out to the opera with my French horn, and when I was called into his office, I took it out and sat there and played, unaccompanied, the first movement of the Mozart Third Horn Concerto. And I think he was so dumbfounded that a kid would do this that he didn't quite know what to say, because I went on and said, would you like me to play the second movement? And he said, no, that's quite all right. He said, actually, I don't determine the extras for the orchestra. You'll need to audition for our principal horn player, who arrives at the beginning of the summer. And so I look back on that now, and I think of that experience. I'm not sure how I would react if a kid walked into my office with an instrument and started to play. And yet he was very polite to me. I think he was sort of stunned at this kid. But sure enough, I kept track of it. And at the beginning of the rehearsal period for the opera, I would call periodically and ask the receptionist, have the musicians arrived yet? And when I found out that they had, then I contacted the principal horn player, and I went to his home and auditioned, and his kids were running around, and his wife also played in the orchestra. And he put me through my paces and asked me to play from memory a whole series of operatic excerpts. And I think they sort of had the mindset that they were going to, you know, kind of you know, get this kid off their backs. And yet, he at the end of the audition, he said, I think we have a spot for you because we need an extra horn player for the offstage orchestra in Der Rosenkavalier. So I was hired for that and to be sort of an assistant in the orchestra. And
at the age of 18?
Yep. I had just turned 18, had just graduated from Santa Fe High School. And my main job, Mary Charlotte, was, you know, kind of arranging the chairs in the orchestra pit, putting the music out on the stands, and sweeping up the orchestra pit after each performance. And so it's kind of amazing to me to think that I've gone from one of the very, very lowest and physically lowest positions in the organization to being the general director.
And meanwhile, you did all sorts of other things like box office manager and stuff like that.
And business. And, you know, John Crosby was, I think, very astute that he realized in order to prepare me for a career in opera management, because I went to him at one point very timidly, and by then I knew you didn't ask lightly for an appointment with the general director. And I said, how would you advise that I would go into arts management and opera management in particular? And he said, young man, report to the office on Monday. I have a job for you. And I was administrative assistant and fund drive clerk. And but he advised me to seek a management training program at the First National Bank of Santa Fe. And so I did that for 3 years and played in the orchestra from time to time, but then came back as box office manager and then business manager, and then I went off on the rest of my career.
Which was in St. Louis?
First in Spoleto, for Charleston at the Spoleto Festival USA, and then in Spoleto, Italy. Then to St. Louis, where I succeeded Richard Gaddis for the first time in my career, and then 24 years later came back to Santa Fe in 2009. And the very first day that I started as general director, October 1st, 2008, was the day the stock market slid by over 500 points and kept going south. So it was, I don't think the two things were related somehow, but it was a kind of a wake-up call and a very serious moment for the opera and for me to figure out how we would navigate through this and stay in the black, because, you know, one of the signature hallmarks of the Santa Fe Opera has been fiscal responsibility. And so I wanted to make sure that everything didn't go to hell in the handbasket when I became general director. And fortunately, we were able to trim the budget some and, you know, made it through that season, 2009, with, I think we had a surplus of $667 on a $15 million budget or something. And we've managed to stay into the black ink since that time through the generosity of our patrons and friends. And you know, it was a little bit difficult during the recession because there was a little dip in ticket sales. I think people were traveling less. And now we're seeing a nice return. Ticket sales for this year already are ahead of last season's sales. And the end number for last year was an all-time record for ticket revenue. So I'm knocking wood.
Yeah, he's knocking wood.
I do a lot of knocking on wood in my job, but things seem to be going okay. And we're just so excited about this season coming up.
How do you gauge who your audiences are? Do you have demographic data, what they like and don't like? Do you respond? Do you do things in response to their needs and so on?
Do you know, I think one of the signatures for the Santa Fe Opera has been to stay true to the mission statement, which, forged by John Crosby, stated that we would perform standard operas, new operas, and rarely performed works. And to combine established performers and emerging artists, too. And staying true to that mission for 56 years, I think, has been one of the keys to the Santa Fe Opera's success. The people know that they can come here and see something that's new and unusual, maybe that's never been performed before or not in a long time, and also that they will have a mix of the standard classics. And so I think if you look at the numbers, the attendance has been pretty strong over the years, and there's been a consistent arc to the growth of the audience. And people we do keep track of our audience. Approximately one half comes from out of state and one half from within the state. And we know that a lot of people come every year from outside of Santa Fe, and others are kind of on a 2 or 3 year cycle that they might go to Europe to see opera, or they might go elsewhere or do something different. But it's a pretty loyal and consistent audience, which is great. And again, I'm knocking wood that we have maintained strength at the box office and the, you know, kind of the consistent bottom line during a period when many other companies are having difficulties and have seen erosion in the audiences, and some companies have had to curtail their number of performances or number of productions, or even to eliminate their young artist programs. So we feel very, very fortunate here, and I think it's a matter of just paying attention and seeking balance in everything. And I think that balance to the repertory has been one of the keys to our success.
You, as general director, have to deal not only with artistic concerns and with, as we talked about, this infrastructure and with massive amounts of fundraising and with, I can only begin to imagine what kind of interpersonal issues and personnel issues, and right. you've got a lot of, I mean, I don't want to say they're all divas, but I mean, they're opera singers.
Some of them are, you're right.
Yeah. Now, what do you love most about doing your job?
Do you know, it's interesting, there's kind of a cyclical nature to the job that, you know, the fall begins, that you're planning, you're beginning the fundraising, you're starting to sell all the tickets, you're doing a lot of planning for future years, and beginning in, say, February or so, we see the building of sets and costumes, and it's all sort of leading to this crescendo going into opening night. My very favorite time of the year is where we are right now, when all of the people have arrived, and it's, you know, I just have to remind myself, this is what we work for all year. And just getting to meet all the different performers and the young people who are working backstage. And I think the combination of this factor of having the established people who are real pros and who have really been around the block and know their skills and their jobs very, very well, with people who are just starting out. And so you have that youthful vigor and enthusiasm, which adds a wonderful energy and fuel to the operation. And so I think that, again, goes back to the matter of balance. But it's so exciting to me to be at this time of year. And then the best part comes, of course, when we get into performances and we have our wonderful public here, and to interact with members of the audience and to hear what they think. You know, my motto is everybody's an opera critic. And so, you know.
Even those of us who know absolutely nothing.
Yeah, you know, even people are, I think opera somehow brings out the critic in everyone, that people seem very, you know, secure in what they like, what they don't like. And the great thing about Santa Fe is that people are willing to venture into new territory. And, you know, I can walk through the audience on a given night and somebody will say, this is the best thing I've ever seen. And somebody else will say, oh, I liked last week's opera better. Or, why did you do this? Or, oh, please do more of this, whatever it is. Some people like the staging, others don't. I think generally everyone acknowledges the level of polish to the performances, because we work very, very hard to have long rehearsal periods and to prepare everything well and to build everything well in terms of the scenery and the costumes. And so there's, I think, a real level of appreciation. And one of the things I wanted to mention is the patron survey that we did last year, which was
right.
kind of amazing, that had a very, very positive response.
Charles McKay is General Director of the Santa Fe Opera. Thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
It's been a great pleasure.